This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Today we're thrilled to feature an episode on how Duke University Medical Center improved operating room efficiency. This episode features Wendy Webster from Duke University Medical Center and Sanjeev Agarwal, President and Chief Operating Officer of LeanTOS. I'm Scott Becker, the founder and publisher of Becker's Hospital and Becker's Healthcare. The episode here is going to focus on an interview between Joe Pardavilla of Forbes Books and Wendy Webster and Sanjeev Agarwal. Wendy's going to talk about teaming up with LeanTOS to solve problems needing more OR time to serve the down patient wait times and by how they partnered with LeanTOS to accomplish this.
So first, before we get going, can you tell us how you got involved with Sanjeev and the folks over at LeanTOS?
We met Sanjeev and his team at LeanTOS when we had a problem. We had more surgeons and patients that needed surgery than we had OR time. And we heard that Sanjeev and LeanTOS had a solution that would make it a lot easier to get patients into the OR in a very efficient way that the surgeons would enjoy.
As Wendy mentioned, LeanTOS and I have been working with Wendy and her team at Duke for several years now, but really this podcast is more to do with what's under the hood and some of the issues facing perioperative leaders like Wendy doing their jobs well, and then touching and highlighting the role of analytics. We've obviously learned a lot from Duke and as we've deployed our tools there, and our current tools reflect that. But maybe the best place to get started is to get to know you a little bit, Wendy, and get some background on who you are. So we'd love to know, tell us a little bit about yourself and your path to your current role as the Director of Clinical Operations for Surgery and Neurosurgery.
So as Sanjeev mentioned, I direct clinical ops at Duke with the surgeons and neurosurgeons. I've been at Duke about 20 years. I came with a master's in psych to work in their health psychology division, which was very strong. And I decided to audit a class at the business school. And it was an aha moment for me. It was like, there's hope for healthcare. Fuqua Business School has a very strong health sector management program. And I would listen to the MD, MBAs describe, this is so depressing. How can we fix this? And I felt like I had tools when I left that classroom with the MBA to really help. So I transitioned kind of to the dark side after I graduated from Fuqua. That background being more clinical and business is just really well suited to partner with the surgeons and our PAs and MPs in all clinical endeavors. The RNs will come to me with problems from the ORs of things we need to work with on the surgeon side. And they affectionately call me the surgeon whisperer. And then the surgeons will turn around and call me the complaint catcher. So I am to fix everything that they run into. But kidding aside, I really drive the strategic execution of clinical ops across multiple surgical departments. And we partner with the hospital, which are those administrators and nurses on the hospital side, to really achieve those results, which can be from operational efficiencies to better outcomes with patients. We just work shoulder to shoulder with our health system to achieve that.
You know, one of the most heartening parts of that story is people going into MBA programs of the quality of Duke. And then instead of going into investment banking and just the traditional areas of where people tend to go, looking at healthcare as a place to go and improve things. So hats off to you for realizing that when you did. Let's talk about the OR because that's where you spend so much of your time. From a top-down perspective, why is the OR so important in the operations of a hospital?
So for a hospital, about 40% of the revenue that comes in the door is from your surgical platforms, but the profit is even more. It's probably about 60%. If you think about that, in addition, you have some pretty hefty costs. This is their most expensive real estate in the health system. So you really want to make efficient use of that time. I sit on the surgeon side of the house, and the more those ORs are efficient, the easier it is for us to get patients in earlier to meet their surgical team and receive that care. Our surgeons are much happier when they're busy in the OR, and they really don't appreciate idle time. They like that. Let's get focused. Let's take care of the patients as quick as we can with that piece.
You know, given that it's Duke and it's a world-renowned academic institution, is there a specific role that the ORs play and OR time plays in research as well?
Definitely. So we really look for opportunities within the ORs of how you can look at those administrative data sets or just from partnerships, which the surgeons are used to doing, being on strong teams, to open those doors so that we can learn from other disciplines. For instance, we have a lab called the Laboratory of Transformative Administration, the LTA, that really wants to take a different view of data and place surgeons, data scientists, management engineers, engineers from Pratt School of Engineering side by side to really take a look at the data, come at it from a different perspective, and see what can be applied from their different backgrounds to make the ORs more efficient. That doesn't work, right, unless you are engaging the frontline staff and partnering with them and getting information from them about what's effective, what problems they run into, and where they see potential solutions as well.
That's fascinating. It feels like almost like a clinical trial in the operations world to be able to invent new methods. Are there a couple of examples of cool things you guys are doing or have done that you want to highlight?
Sure. So we, like many other academic medical centers, have spent a lot of money on electronic health record. And every quarter, we typically go through an upgrade, which just happened last weekend. And prior to that, we had worked on really creating system architecture to really follow event-driven models with that piece. We have a data lake where this unstructured data pours into, and it has been stable now for a week after that upgrade. So next week, we get to go and kind of delve into that, looking at really models for OR efficiency. So imagine what can happen when you're getting really data with only a latency of 80 to 90 seconds, how that can inform models that you have for clinical care, triggering kind of queuing. This has just happened in the OR. This instrument crossed the surgical field, or the surgeon called for this to trigger. This case is going to go long. Now you need to do these other things to move patients through. So you can really tie that into queuing of the patient and patient flow, as well as thinking about from a research perspective, just those trials. Instead of having nurses pour through the records and look for a patient who's had a positive or negative test or this data element crop up, let's have that push to the model to start that model as soon as it appears in the medical record. So that that way you're saving time and you're reaching that patient much earlier in the process.
Very interesting, and would love to, you know, we can spend hours on these sorts of tools, I know. But let's move to talking about the operations of the OR and surgery, because as you know, Wendy, in the book, Better Healthcare Through Math, we have an entire chapter devoted to OR utilization and some of the practices and systems and core beliefs that have held that back. And Duke's done a great job of improving OR utilization and managing those practices. Maybe we can start right at the beginning, because so much of what happens in an OR is built around this concept of block time. And so if there are people listening to this who don't know what block time is, it'd be great to get an overview from you as to what a block is, how it's assigned, and why was a block-based system even created in the first place?
So I think of a OR block similar to if you had rooms in a clinic. And I assigned a room to Sanjeev, a room to Joe. Sanjeev always has that room on the first week of the month. Joe has it on the second and fourth week of the month, etc. So that's similar to how OR blocks are managed. They are assigned to a surgeon, and a block would be that OR room for that day. And a block can be 8-hour block, typically in an ambulatory surgery center, or on a main platform, 10 or 12-hour block for that piece. And the idea is that the surgeon would then sequence their cases within that block to do all their surgeries on that day. It's important to think about the weeks of the month, the day of the week, because there's other constraints for the surgeons, right? Like clinic that I just talked about. They need to have time in clinic. When is that available? They cover VA clinic and ORs. When is that available as well? So it's putting these pieces of the puzzle together that a lot of times they don't have any movement. They're very landlocked. And so it's important to have that block available for the surgeon so they can predictably be in clinic with their patient and describe, we can do your surgery on that fourth week of the month because that's when I have OR time for that piece.
Got it. And, you know, in the book, we build on it, Wendy, as you know, where we talk about this idea of block being a really good thing because it enables surgeons to use their non-clinic time to do surgeries and also helps you as the administrator plan on the supply side to make everything that needs to be made available for them to be able to use that block. But at the same time, from a demand supply matching perspective, when we assign block, it sometimes is the case that people that have block time don't end up using all of it. And then people who need time don't have a lot of block. So as someone in your position that's with a lot of responsibility over clinical operations, how do you ensure that surgeons have the right time for appropriate patient access? And what are your goals and objectives in managing OR capacity?
So previously, I think we looked at it very much from a constraint point of view of the most constraints that we have are typically OR blocks, because at Duke, we have 105 ORs across six surgical platforms. And so that typically, and they're all allocated. So there's no additional time. You have to find time within. So typically you lock into that block and then you would build on that piece from the things that have fewer constraints at the end. What I found is we need to think about it differently, more to what you've described in a broader perspective about matching supply and demand of that entire continuum of if I place this surgeon with block on this day and their length of stay for their patients is 2 or 3 days, how does that impact the entire patient flow? And so we found through reviewing this that you need to include everyone in those discussions so that you can have a thorough plan with regards to how you're managing that OR time. That needs to be done with the surgeons together. Because if you described earlier, Sanjeev, there's a lot of ownership around the blocks with the surgeons, and it is a very difficult thing to ask one surgeon to give up their block. So instead, we shifted the mindset to how can you share your time or elevate the performance of your division or department with regards to OR utilization by looking at as far as it really a coupled amount of time that you share to manage that capacity and better meet that demand from patients that are presenting to go to the OR. It's hard to do that when it's on pencil and paper, right? It's someone's book, it's a sticky note that says, well, you gave up that block, but Joe, he can't use it on that day. So having an electronic repository to really access that data in real time allows the surgeons to add additional time when they need it and to release time when they don't need it to their partners. And that is a very different mindset that is much better received from a surgeon perspective of how are we helping our entire division, department, surgeons, create a way that we can get patients in earlier for their care.
And, you know, Wendy, you and I may have actually talked about this story, but, you know, in most health systems, this mindset shift of I'm a block owner and it's okay to release my time when I know I'm not going to use it for someone else to use that time, because I am going to need time when other people have time, but I don't, and they won't use it. That's kind of a prisoner's dilemma problem that is hard to solve. And it reminds me a lot of why people hoard, you know, during COVID, for example, people hoarded toilet paper, but that was an extreme example. Every year when storms happen, people go and buy a couple of gallons of milk and put it in their fridge, and oftentimes they don't use that milk. And the reason is it's a scarcity mindset, right? There's only so many gallons of milk and I better go run and get some for my family because the store is going to close when the storm comes. And if the store told you, hey, look, there's always going to be milk and I'm going to deliver it to you, and you shift from a mindset of there isn't enough to a mindset of plenty, that changes dramatically. And it sounds like you've been able to change that mindset a little bit at Duke in order for people to give up their time early and others to be able to pick it up.
Definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about demand and supply shocks. And the most recent one is obviously COVID. So when you think about having a reasonably stable block schedule and the system where people had started to release their time a little bit sooner than auto-release allowed in the EHR and others could pick it up, what did COVID do? What were the big changes you had to make because of COVID? I'm assuming elective surgery was down for at least a few weeks. So how did you have to react?
I think because we had spent a lot of time as a health system, again, there's six surgical platforms, really looking at what volume was coming in, what did that demand look like, as well as what capacity we had to manage that, that we quickly made a shift within 12 to 24 hours to engage the surgeons around this. So our chair, who was also surgeon in chief of the health system, really challenged us to ensure three important points were considered with every decision. Patient acuity, could they be safely delayed greater than 30 days and the disease process not impacted in a way that would harm them? Two, are there resources available? ICU beds, blood supply? And three, what is kind of the tenor of the team, of the staff, the nurses and the ORs, the faculty, as well as on the floors? And so all those three things needed to be considered with any decision that was made. We immediately reached out to different communication lines for 500 surgeons to have the surgeons go in and rank the priority of their cases each day, so that way we had a 6 a.m. call with the health system to review what COVID patients had come in the door, what resources did they need, et cetera, and then measure that against that acuity, that resource need of the OR, and make decisions really case by case with regards to every surgery that we were going to do. And that went on for a solid 10 weeks with that piece. But it allowed us to provide care for the patients that were needed. And I think it just goes back to prior to COVID, we were really able to maximize the ability to provide care for patients. And when we turned that corner with COVID pandemic beginning, we were able to judiciously ensure patient and staff safety and really slow down as kind of the brake was put on with regards to care. So it was a very collaborative process with that input of the surgeons with that piece.
That's a really interesting story, Wendy, because it sounds like you had the technical infrastructure in place and the people in process around it to be able to say, okay, if I am hit by a completely unexpected asteroid called COVID, I'm still able to be nimble and resilient because I've got tools and I've got analytics and I've got the management processes in place. So let's talk a little bit about that infrastructure and pre-COVID and even now as you're recovering from COVID. By the way, are you back to your original volumes pre-COVID or are you still getting there?
We are back to original volumes across all
wow.
the platforms.
That's incredible. Congratulations. And that's such a big deal for taking care of patients. So that's an incredibly awesome thing to be proud of. So talk to us a little bit about how you use analytics to maximize the use of your ORs. We'd love to know some of the tools you use, some of the ways you look at data, how you make decisions.
You know, going back to kind of pre-COVID, not only was it a mind shift with the surgeons with regards to how we manage block and work as a team around that piece, it was also a mindset of administrators with regards to not only looking back at OR utilization and how we're doing throughout the day, but also how do you look forward about what is needed as we go into the future by each surgeon for that piece. There's never one perfect metric to tell you the answer going forward, but that story behind all the metrics really helps you understand what's needed. For example, if there's a surgeon that's very efficient and finishes early, then their OR utilization for that day might not be the strongest. However, if I look at additional metrics, how many times are they requesting additional OR block? What day are they requesting that additional OR block on? That feeds me information about, do we need to request block on this day for this provider? Are they releasing a lot of time on another day? Is there some conflict that's come up and they don't need that time anymore? Has there been a change in demand from their patients? The other piece that's helpful for me is to really look at their out-of-block time as well. How are we doing with regards to case time accuracy with posting, with regards to the acuity of that specific patient population, with the case length as well? So those items together tell that story. And we cross multiple platforms with the surgeon. So it's important to put that information side by side. This is how you're performing on the main platform. And these are the different behaviors you have with regards to requesting time, releasing time, or this is how you're doing on the other platform where we thought we were going to grow market share, but we're just not realizing it. How can we create a decision together of shifting maybe OR time one way or another? And so you're really using that data that's accessible to the surgeons all the time to make those decisions together around that.
You know, and what's remarkable about what you just described is also the fact that you've been able to get surgeon engagement in their data, because as we work with health systems across the country, that's actually a real challenge. Because oftentimes they don't believe the numbers, and oftentimes they're not as engaged. And so anything that comes out of administration is looked upon with a bit of a jaundiced eye. And this level of engagement with good data that is being used to make decisions also drives up the collaboration you talked about. Because I'm assuming the trust that's built up by knowing, hey, we're trying to collectively do the right thing, that's pretty remarkable.
Exactly. And I think showing, really providing the data to the surgeon to allow them to validate that is helpful. Here's the data. Let's then trace it through the system. So in business school and accounting classes, it was trace the cash. With our electronic health record, for me, it is let's trace the patient through. Let's look at all those timestamps and see why the outcome of OR utilization was this. Were we staggering two rooms? Did we get shifted at the last minute to a different room because a COVID patient came in and they went into the OR that I'm typically in with that piece? So really responsiveness back to the surgeon when questions are made around data, and then to go right to the data and look at it together with that piece. I found whenever I'm partnering with the surgeon, we move quickly and we are very successful around that piece. And that, you know, is also the essence of the lab I described before. It's really working side by side with the surgeons or the frontline staff with that piece.
Now, Duke has an interesting characteristic. It's one of the best health systems in the country and in the world. It's an academic medical institution, but it's not monolithic. Like you said, there are six platforms, and some of them are part of the academic institution, and some of them are more community-based. Are the challenges different if you are in the academic setting versus the community one?
Definitely, and I think we saw this when we were building kind of the platforms to exchange kind of ORs. What constraints did you need to put in place? Because the main platform is typically sub specialty, I have different nurses that have competencies to cover certain cases versus other specialties that there's certain equipment or the even physical plant with that piece that lends towards one specialty versus another. So in the main platform, there's a lot of releasing to that service line. You have opportunities in the future to look at where do like services work together, so you could couple them together to grow capacity. And so that's a work in progress. It's a bit of a culture shift to work towards that. But most academic medical centers also have community hospitals as well, and there's less constraints. And so you can release into more open time. What I found is There's no algorithm that can do that by itself. You still need a human being, and I like that human being being a nurse, kind of driving that decision, really directing that review of that request for that OR time. And is this the right room size? Are there service line constraints? We have three spine surgeons on Monday. We can't have a fourth spine surgeon with that piece. You're really giving staff more time to direct that orchestra versus doing transactional steps.
Got it.
With that.
Very helpful. Last couple of questions. As you've talked about a lot of change that you've brought about in your ORs over the last few years in terms of how you manage them, the tools you use, the analytics you use. And so it's really a three-part question, all of which has to do with how you've been successful at doing that. One has to do with where you use your EHRs and where you use other tools. EHRs are obviously really important. They're the backbone of the data that you capture, but they're limited in some ways. The second has to do with, so it goes back to people, process, and technology again, in terms of how you augment your EHRs with other tools. And related to that is just some of the core beliefs that you've been able to change, that it's okay to share time, it's okay to release time. And so if you were to be giving advice to any of your peers across the country or the world as to what some of the best practices are around how you augment your EHR and how you overcome some of these beliefs.
I would start with your frontline staff and making sure that you have accurate data, because that's really the foundation of your house and that EHR. And, you know, the data looks different to different individuals. So as an administrator, I see data on the front end with different names versus the surgeon when they're inputting data into the EHR versus the nurse versus the folks that support the EHR on the back end. So you have to get all those people in the room together and literally have their computers pointed to one another to understand, are we all speaking the same language with the right data point? Because I think that's where we fail. We assume it's the right data element or the timestamp, yet we're all coming at it from different perspectives. So that's your foundation of the house. The second part is, how does that integrate with different tools that kind of sit on top of that EHR? And that's where it's really important, because you can move at a much quicker pace. You can bring more power or compute to that so that you can really create that algorithm in a very quick pace so that you can make decisions in real time around that piece. Building that into your EHR is somewhat cumbersome, and the EHR is a product that you have that really should be that foundation of the house. The things that sit on top of that should help illuminate the path that you want to go down by allowing you to pull different constellations of data together to drive a model forward with that piece. And then bringing that right back to the surgeons, to the nurses and the ORs to say, does this look right? Let's look at it together. What other questions do you have that we need to test in this system? And that's where you build that trust. I have learned the consistency on a weekly basis of feeding data to the surgeons that is beneficial to them. They actually read those emails. They look for those emails every week. We have one on Thursdays that comes out that talks about what your OR minutes were, what was your first case on time start. And if they don't get it, I start getting little love notes around that piece. So, you know, you grow that trust, but you also, you must continue that and look at, well, what's the next step we need to take together to make ORs more efficient?
Wendy, thank you. This has been extremely illuminating. Congratulations on all the successes you've had at Duke. And obviously, as LeanTAS, we appreciate the partnership and you taking the time to share your experience and your thoughts. This will be incredibly beneficial for a lot of people. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed our discussion today.
We want to thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. We also want to particularly thank LeanTAS for hosting this episode. We greatly appreciate their contribution. to the Becker's Healthcare podcast and the work that Lintas does, which is a remarkable firm. Thank you.